This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
This isn't just a normal lasagna. This is sheets of Italian pasta and succulent English minced beef, picked up with love at the cash and carry and lovingly placed in the microwave. This is a Frida fry at the Bull lasagna. The Bull sponsors Dumpty Dum.
Dumpty Dum is really cool. It's my favourite podcast. But don't listen while you drink. You sort it out of your nose. Lucy's a honey and really funny, and Royfield laughs like a drain. Dumpty Dum is really cool. I thought I'd tell you again.
All right, let's just launch into it.
Okay.
And let's have a good one.
Yes.
This is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality docudrama that is centred on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm Royfield Brown, who cooked a curry last night. And with me, I have the woman who likes a podcast in her pants.
Lucy Freeman.
And the last part of her, it happened in Greenbury Fields, is you. Day's touching musical Dumpty Dum. I love that.
It was very sweet.
Yeah, I was like, aww. was sent in by Goddess Diva. Lucy, can you remind our listeners how they can win the accolade of Dumpty Dumber of the Week?
I can. Please ring in and leave us a plot prediction, a secret crush, or how you got into the Archers. You can contact us via dumptydum.com and use SpeakPipe, or you can call 0203 031 3105. No stick this week because you have all been very good and we have calls a go-go, which is fabulous. Thanks to Harriet Carmichael of Shambridge for the Brill sponsorship message, as always, and Derek for the loan of the back bedroom. He is very worried this week about Scottish independence and how it will affect trade, largely. He's not much of a whiskey drinker, but he is terrified someone might cut off his tummocks.
Oh, a good bit of topicality there.
Thank you.
Well done. But, you know, as I said before, I'm worried about Jazz's visa situation. Yeah.
Jesus, Jazz is the only bit of light relief. Don't let him go, please. No. We'll club together and keep him here somehow.
On this week's How Good Was the Writing of a Show, we have calls from Andrea Melling, who likes the teenage betrayals, Miss Mid-City, who's fast becoming a fan favourite, who would lose all respect for Hayley if she stayed, Mary Not Contrary, part of our Toronto duo, who has a rebound plan for Hayley, Victoria Litterer, who's crossed with Peggy, Alison Fahey, the cheeky bint. She is the cheeky bint, isn't she?
She is the cheeky bint, yes.
Who is impressed with Hayley, Sarah Brown, who actually does impressions of herself now, who thinks that Johnny is Dixon from Secret Garden, Ben Hardy, who called in while stripping, and Maeve, the lovely Maeve, who has praise for the writers. But first, before all that, Lucy, put some trousers on and please do tell us about the last week in Ambridge.
Milt the Mikeman is chucking it all in. It's official. He told Jazza off for being slightly too keen on customer service. At first, I thought Jazza saying he'd put someone's recycling out for years was a euphemism, then realised he really did mean that, but the van had been nicked while he was getting his hands round someone semi-skimmed. If the Chuckle Brothers, aka Jazza and Ed, are serious about taking over the milk round, then they might want to think about getting the milk pasteurised and Jazza sterilised. Nature boy Johnny.
That's very good, that. Well done. How long did it take to come up with that gag?
Shut your face. Nature boy Johnny, formerly known as Rich, coaxed King Kong down off the Empire State Building. Well, it sounded like that. I think he was actually trying to prize Tony off Otto. Anyway, he's turned out to be a cow whisperer par excellence. Bridge Farm is now officially Delusion Central. Johnny has been adopted and absorbed by Pat into the family with the speed of Madonna stepping out of a helicopter, scooping up a variety of differently hued children and flying them back to Knightsbridge. Lest we forget the mission of the Archers to educate and entertain, we learn the following in Moni's training of Johnny.
And inform.
Yes, educate and entertain and inform. A young turkey is called a poult.
Wasn't that the mission statement of the BBC as opposed to the Archers?
I know, but every programme's supposed to follow it. Inform, educate and entertain.
Okay.
It was Rees-Mogg, wasn't it? Not Rees-Mogg, what was he called?
Lord
Rees. You know, Lord Rees-Mogg, what am I talking about? Lord Rees. A young turkey is called a poult. when herding cows, don't wave your arms in the air, don't wave them like you just don't care.
The voice in form.
What?
The voice, that programme on the BBC.
Does it help?
With the swivel chairs.
No, it doesn't.
How does that educate?
Well, it teaches people not to bother watching it, I think.
All right.
I'm going to start that bit again now because you buggered me joke.
Sorry.
A young turkey is called a poult. When herding cows, don't wave your arms in the air, don't wave them like you just don't care. Voguing and the hokey-cokey are also inadvisable. Anyway, Eddie described Johnny as every inch a bridge farm archer, moody, prone to taking offence, and with a horrifying predilection for bulls and soup. Peggy, with her customary tact, diplomacy and compassion, suggested that Johnny be repatriated to Leeds forthwith, or failing that, a detention centre. I don't blame her. Poor Peggy. Every time she nods off, she wakes up blearily and gets introduced to someone she's never seen before as a new member of her family. Rory, Johnny, Rob, poor old bugger. I bet she wakes up and has to have a shifty look round before she dares nip to the lav in case there's another brand new relation lurking by the coffee table with his hand out. I suppose I could talk about the flipping road, but to be honest, I'm sick of the whole thing. I no longer care about Route B, and I hope it gets built straight through the middle of the green burial ground. However, the name of the Snellamy Bellamy baby is always good value. We're on Mungo now, or possibly Bungle, I wasn't listening. I think we're working our way through the cast of Rainbow. Josh is taking driving lessons.
Zippy!
And has a new voice. Yeah.
I love Zippy.
Bungle, Zippy, and where was the other one? George.
Yeah, George.
Yay!
Now we've added George on the archers.
Yes, we have. Got George.
Yeah, no, Randy. I said we have. Yeah,
oh,
yeah,
sorry,
yeah.
I thought you said we haven't.
No, it's George Barford as well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes, of course, that's who he's named after, isn't it?
Ah, Zippy! No, ah, Bungle, because that is Zippy's voice. Oh, Jeffrey.
It's like Dead Ringers when you have to announce who you're doing, just to make sure everyone understands the gag. Josh is taking driving lessons and has a new voice, so that's nice. Most boys of his age get wobbly voices, nothing unusual there, but to get one that's two octaves lower, a bit posher, and actually worryingly hot is very odd. Helen was so concerned that people in the village might think Jess had been knocked up by Rob that she went to see lots of people who hadn't even seen Jess to reassure them that Jess had not been knocked up by Rob, thus alerting them to the very real possibility that Jess had been knocked up by Rob.
By Rob.
Susan is now officially the worst storyteller in Ambridge. She makes Bert Fry look like Peter Ustinov. All she had to do was say, "Oh, Clary, guess what? I saw Jess in the shop and she was pregnant." And instead, we got the Viking saga of her counting the fives into bundles and Jim getting his Riley serviced before she got anywhere near Jess and the Robum. Elizabeth took advantage of invisible Geraldine being at Lower Loxley to give Roy the heave-ho. Roy was stopped short of his fantastical imagining of himself and a deer stalker as the laird of Lower Loxley, with Freddie and Lily surging round his knee saying, "We're so glad you're our new daddy, Roy," by Elizabeth, who has suddenly come to her senses and realised that Roysabeth would be disastrous. And then we had Locket Gate. Who would have thought such a tiny little thing could cause so much trouble? And the locket. But it was a revelation. Hayley Tucker, she of the Potato Prince, the "Let's buy Phoebe a new cagoule," the "Oh, Roy, I had a lovely day sorting my sock drawer," suddenly discovered her inner Greta Garbo and did such a devastating, deadly dismantling of Roy Tucker that I stood next to the radio with my little hands clasped in girlish glee. She handed Roy his locket and his testicles back in an envelope. It was fantastic. She was calm, she was filled with icy fury, and Roy flapped around helplessly like a dog with his head trapped in a pillowcase. So, a message from us all at Dumpty Dum, Roy. Tuck off and don't let the door hit you on the arse on the way out.
you forgot the goggles for swimming.
The what now?
Phoebe needed a cagoule.
Oh, she did, didn't she?
Mm.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, it's heartbreaking, that whole thing. Do you know what? The bit that got me, there were two bits, and I actually wrote them down because I just thought they were just heartbreaking. The writing was so good. When she went to see Elizabeth, and she just did this, because she's got such a soft, lovely little voice as well, and she just went, "It was a lovely world, Elizabeth." And it was just so plaintive and I don't know, it's just gorgeous. And then, don't you have enough here without taking my husband as well?
Yeah.
And then with the locket, when Roy came in and saw the locket, and he just went, hello, what are you? Oh. And then he sees it. And then she just went, a little heart that she didn't want. And I thought, that's good. It's great.
Yeah, no,
great.
It was brilliant writing. It was devastatingly acted. And we are actually being served up double, treble portions of wonderful drama at the moment.
Yeah.
And what I really like about it is that, you know, we've talked about the fact that we really like, you know, kind of character really being at the fore as opposed to being, you know, being driven by plot. But this seems to be like this kind of really happy kind of synthesis where that we've got this massive storyline, but the dialogue is written so depthfully, and there are these brilliant other levels to it. And, you know, Hayley hasn't just become some kind of harridan, you know, that you'd get like on EastEnders. She isn't screaking and whatever and like, I can't believe you did this to me. She's been true to the character of Hayley Tucker in the way that she's dealing with it. And it's absolutely phenomenal. And I think they will sort this out.
I don't know, but he's got to stop lying.
But I know, because he said it happened at Greenbury Fields.
He said it only happened once.
Yes.
Bollocks.
Yes.
And he kind of gave the impression. Well, it was bollocks.
Was that pun intended?
He said it had only happened once, which was rubbish. And he kind of gave the impression that he'd finished with Elizabeth, didn't he?
Yeah. It is possible, actually, to be in love with two people. And I suppose to go back to what we talked about last week about infatuation as opposed to love. There is the love of somebody who you have deep bonds with and routine with, and that love doesn't burn as bright, and it's only when it's kind of cleaved away that you go, oh, wait a minute, you know, there's half of me, you know, I'm missing a leg, I'm missing a limb, I'm missing, you know, half of me. And then there is the kind of that immediate, I just need to see that person, I need to feel them, they make me feel alive. And that's obviously what Elizabeth provides, whereas Hayley is kind of hair on my face type of thing, you know, that peculiar thing that he said to Tom all that months ago. So I think his panic is absolutely kind of genuine, and he hadn't.
But it's panic, though. It is panic. But it's more, I think it's more panic about what are people going to think of me for doing this, rather than genuine affection for Hayley. And he doesn't want to upset the children and everything. But someone said on Twitter, and I can't remember who it was, but they said if Elizabeth changed her mind and said,
he would be on.
You're on. He'd leave bloody skid marks in his efforts to get there as fast as he could.
It would be off. He would be off. But the vast majority, you look at any kind of survey, poll, whatever, about infidelities within long-standing relationships, and most relationships actually do survive them. And potentially this could go a multiplicity of ways, and maybe the Tuckers will be able to survive this, and maybe there is going to be this massive kind of power shift between Roy and Hayley. And I just hope that we hear more from Hayley, because Hayley's been one of these massively underutilized characters, you know, just like Roy has been. You know, we said boring Roy Tucker.
Yeah.
So was Hayley. Hayley was this one-dimensional, almost comedy, brummy voice.
Yeah.
Who was just really good with kids.
Yeah.
And that was it. She's just been really good with kids for 15-odd years.
I think she's much too easy to underestimate, A, as an actress, and B, as an absolute props to the actress. It was she was fantastic.
Oh, she was. She was.
But also as a character, because she dealt with Kate, and
she did.
Nobody can deal with Kate, and you know,
other than Lucas
on the show next week, friend of the show. She's kind of she does have that stoicism, but I think we've seen now it's combined with a kind of a true. She doesn't just put up with any old shit. It is genuinely combined with a strength of character, because she didn't make it a big drama. She just kept her head
Yeah, she did. And she collected her thoughts and picked her time because we're all saying, well, when's she going to say anything?
Yeah.
You know, she's waited a week.
Do you know what the thing that made the hair on the back of my neck up? You could hear the fridge hum in the background in that scene where they were in the kitchen together. And you know when you get that butt in a kitchen late at night, you either get the butt, if you have like a strip light thing or something like that, we used to have strip lights and you'd get that noise, or you get just a hum of the fridge. And you could hear the hum of the fridge and that was all you could hear. And I thought, oh, that is so good. And it just, I did just stand. I was crossing the kitchen and it started. He came through the door and I just stopped and I didn't move again for another 7 minutes, just listening. Absolutely brilliant.
You know, it's, yeah, we've had how maybe 12 minutes of Roy and Hayley over the two shows, because there were other characters and whatever. It has been one of the most absorbing 12 minutes of powerful, realistic relationship drama.
Yeah.
You know, as we've said before, nobody was screaming. This wasn't, effing and blinding, but you absolutely got the drama, the pathos, the tragedy, just like the heartbreak. It was absolutely beautifully done.
Hoorah.
Shall we now go to the phone lines?
Okay.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
Hi, it's Andrea Melling, normally from Houston, but now at the moment in Oklahoma. I'm just sending you a message about Helen. She really has lost it if she doesn't ask for a DNA test. She could just say that, oh, of course, I trust you, Rob, but, you know, the only way to quieten the gossip is to be able to say for certain that you've had a test and it's not yours. Surely the woman has some self-preservation. It's also a shame that she doesn't have any friends, or the only friend she does have hate Rob. You know, Ian springs to mind. So I'm really struggling to think who she could turn to who wouldn't say I told you so, but might actually give her some decent advice. Just a quick word about teenagers. As the mother of three of them, I was really happy to see how they were shown this week. Well done, Freddie, telling Elizabeth what she needed to hear. And how nice to see Johnny be helpful and cheerful. Long may it last. I hope that we have some positive teenagers in Ambridge. That would be lovely. Thanks. Bye.
Yes! Andrea, she has lost the plot if Rob doesn't do a paternity test. And I agree, it is nice to see that teenagers are behaving quite well. We've had the grotty teenagers like Jamie Perks was a bit of a pain in the arse, setting fire to things and drinking and being an idiot. And Freddie's having his little, chucking his toys. But then that is understandable as he is in a fairly unusual family situation at the moment. But yes, and it's good that the teenagers are not being used as kind of just, you know, whenever we need a bit of turbulence, we plonk it on the nearest adolescent. So yes, it's and Johnny is you know, clearly James Herriot in the making. So yes, there is lots of nice positive teenage portrayals at the moment.
Hi, it's Miss Mid-City. I've calmed down a bit since last week. I'm just feeling really sad after that episode on Friday. Hayley just doesn't... Of course, she doesn't sound like her usual chirpy self. She sounds really defeated. And Roy and Elizabeth don't even sound sorry. That's what's kind of hurtful about this. But at least Roy was candid and honest about why he'd got involved with Elizabeth in the first place. It's that business about him not only being indispensable, but being made to feel really important and really indispensable because she was relying on him so much. Not if there's any good excuse for getting involved in an extramarital affair, I don't know if that's a good one, because she really liked me and really needed me. Ooh, no, that's not going to work with me. But I don't disagree. It's a stupid fantasy. Yeah, and so ultimately, was it all worth it? I would lose complete respect for Hayley if she stayed with him. So I wonder what the scriptwriters are going to do with this. she sounded like a woman that was her and is just weighing things up, and she's going to take some time. She wants him to come up with the answers. But I don't want to hear anything else from him, and I wouldn't in her position. Just so long as she doesn't end up hating herself, because she didn't deserve this kind of treatment from the script writers. And it was interesting, she went back to Kate and feeling that she was the also-ran, the second best choice there. And just the fact that she hasn't really done very much since John was horrible and dumped all over her. She's not really had much to do apart from look after chickens and children. And then even then, it's not been straightforward looking after, or rather raising, or rather trying to get pregnant. That was a problem she had. It wasn't that she's never had a problem with Phoebe, but what on earth is this going to do with the Tucker family dynamic and with Mike and Vicky moving on? I just don't know, because I'm pretty sure they are going, and it could be a mass exodus of Tuckers. I'm not sure that's a bad thing, but I would have wanted better for Hayley. I hope she does come out of this with her integrity and her credibility intact, if nothing else. And those two other jokers, God knows what they should do with them. Elizabeth, just the reptilian lizard I've always thought she was. Just nasty and cold. And Roy, just a total buffoon. Cool. Call them. Get rid.
I agree, Miss Mid-City. I felt very sad after that episode. And I'm worried that Hayley is being bounced into this decision by Roy, because he just did not stop talking in that last... when he thought he could see a little chink in her armour, he just went in faster and faster and faster and faster, you know. Well, we don't have to do anything now. We don't feel we can think about it. But, I mean, don't go, because I love you and I love the children and I don't want to do anything to upset them, and it will all be better and I'll try so hard and da, 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 da. And I was thinking, just give... She's coming to terms with something massive. She's reassessing years and years of her life. Do not bounce her into it. Give her some space. Because if that happens, then that... The second bounce will... That's when it will... end. And when she said she was always second best to Kate, I thought, oh, you're so much better than Kate.
She's absolutely better than Kate, though Lucas, who we have on the show next week, might disagree.
But yeah, to be fair, Dr. Crippin's better than Kate.
I don't know about this. Is just so tricky, this whole kind of storyline, because we have already in the village the woman who puts up with affairs, and that Jennifer Aldridge. What we don't want is for Hayley to be Jennifer Aldridge light in that respect.
She won't be, though, because once she finds out that Roy has lied to her again, even at the point when he didn't have anything else to lose, when he could have said, yes, it happened a few times and it was a mistake, and he didn't, his ego still wouldn't let him do that, and he still had to lie.
When she finds out
that's a fib, that's it.
I don't know if it's ego, but I think it's a common ploy for people who've been rumbled to downplay the amount of sexual contact they've actually had.
Or to just say, oh, it just happened because we were drunk.
Or it was just a couple of times and
it was just once.
Yeah, I know. But it's a common ploy. And again, I applaud the script writers for throwing that in. Because if you look at the manual of infidelity, the amount...
You got that? Can I borrow yours?
Shut up.
I lent mine to someone ages ago and they've gone off with it. Who'd have thought? So you couldn't trust somebody who wanted the manual of infidelity.
I tell you, just as a brief little segue, I think it was on Radio 4 a couple... Yeah, it was about 2 years ago. Listening to this vicar, a priest, talking about infidelity, and he'd been a man of the cloth for some 30 years, and he said in 30 years what he's noticed is that discovery on infidelity, the time, has rapidly come down. And he said it's because of mobile phones and digital technology. Yeah. He said, 30 years ago, somebody could conduct an affair for years.
Yeah.
You know.
But also it's all speeded up, because you can have the whole relationship in 2 weeks. You can have you can have, apart from the sex bit, if you happen to be on, you know, different continents or something, but you can have the meeting up and the getting to know you and the intense chats and the, so where did you go to school and da 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 da. You can have all that, and then you can have the I love you, love you, love you, and then you can have that, oh blimey, I think this has got a bit out of hand. And then you can have the rapid, you know, Securicall van reversing as you try and get out of the situation. And, you know, it can all be done and dusted in 3 weeks. And when you think about, you know, most Austen novels would be 4 pages long now, because nobody would have to be waiting for 3 weeks for a letter to be delivered by coach and then returned, you know. So the whole thing speeded up.
You are right. You are right. He said back in the day, in the 1970s, it would be 3 years before an affair was discovered. He says now it's less than 6 months. You know, he says the trail that people leave is just all over the place and whatever. Yeah. And but anyway.
And especially when they send bits of jewellery back with their idiot son to the wife of the person they've been rogering, for crying out loud. Yeah, anyway, I think that's more of an IQ deficit than anything else.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's Mary, not contrary, in Toronto. It's Friday evening, and I've just listened to the episode where Hayley confronts Roy about the locket, about the affair with Elizabeth. I thought it was brilliantly done. Very chilling. Listen to that scene 3 times. I really feel for Hayley and how she's questioning everything now, feeling that she was always the runner-up, first to Kate and now to Elizabeth, these two Archer's girls who've really, you know, just sort of had designs on Roy, and she's always been the afterthought. And I guess really thinking back, Hayley and Roy got together, they were both on the rebound, Roy from Kate and Hayley after John's tragic death. I feel like Hayley's now finally waking up and realising what she's worth, and perhaps there's a chance that she could encounter the young Johnny around the village, who is apparently the spitting image of his father John, and perhaps there could be some chemistry there and Hayley could have a fling with a much younger man, and that would be a great way to get revenge on Roy and have some fun for Hayley. But I don't think Roy and Hayley's marriage will last. I think Roy will sort of go back to Elizabeth, or at least he'll try to. He'll beg her to reconsider, but it sounds like she's pretty determined not to continue things with him, so she won't. And as I predicted a while ago, after they'd had the initial hookup at the music festival, I think Roy will be broken and dejected and will end up in a support group with Daryl. I do also wonder about Phoebe's mental well-being, because if you remember from Ambridge Extra, a little while ago, she was pretty upset when she was in South Africa and Kate was having an affair with that really creepy guy, Johan. So I think if Phoebe finds out about her father's infidelity, that I just don't know what that will do to her. Although she's a little bit older now, a little bit more mature. She's 16 now, she can leave home before too long. You know, maybe that will be a thing to sort of get her thinking about what she wants to do with her life and moving on.
Rebounds for Hayley. Mary, not contrary. Johnny's an option, love, but I think he's barely out of short trousers. I think we're verging on the illegal, so possibly not that, I would... harassment burns, possibly, you know, somebody a bit. I think she just needs somebody to make her feel like she's not second best. She needs someone to fall hopelessly in love with her. I'm slightly anxious that might be Jazza, because he's always had a bit of a soft spot for Hayley, but who knows?
Nah.
Victoria,
too, well, too rough and ready.
You what? Jazza's what?
Too rough and ready for our Hayley.
Do you think?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe.
Hi, it's Victoria Littler in Toronto, Canada, calling in for the very first time. So Just a few things. Big props for the emotional and serious conversations about the serious topics this week. I love the commentary about emotional abuse and how it is abuse. Emotional abuse is abuse. And Lucy referenced an article by somebody who I never heard of, but I found it interesting and I'd like to read it and send it to one of my friends who really needs to read it because she's a victim of this emotional abuse. And I love the discussion about the true nature of love. Because I think Roy is infatuated. I don't think it's real love. It's just too, there's just something about the way it's being performed. I don't think it's real love. And I that made me think about the true nature of love. And I enjoyed that thinking process. But of course you make me laugh every week. You make me laugh. I love the commentary about the baggy snatch name. And Rob's new name being the Titanic because he looks good and then it gets all chilly and then all of a sudden it's a shit show and you're just gonna die. Yeah, I think that's totally right about Rob. You make me laugh all the time, mostly on the subway, which is what you would call the tube. And I get on and there's about 14,000 people trying to get in the same car and I'm sitting there, well, I'm standing there really, and I have no room and I'm listening to the podcast and I'm laughing my head off and I think people think I'm bonkers, but you know what, I don't care because it's my little stress reliever. So a couple things, Alistair and Shula, something's going on there, something's going on, he's either playing away from home or he's got another addiction because they're dropping little hints about that. He didn't get her a birthday present and this and that. I don't really care because I don't really like them that much. She bugs me. But what really offended me this week was where how Peggy was speaking to Pat about Johnny and how Peggy was saying to Pat, he needs to go back to his real home and I told you this would happen. Oh my God, I would have like slapped the old lady across the face. And I don't know what that is. What's that about? Is that because Johnny's illegitimate and he's the son of Sharon and Sharon lived in a trailer and Peggy's way too posh to welcome him into the family? She sort of says he's a nice young man and then she says, well, no, he shouldn't be here. And clearly he's going to stay at the farm and clearly he's going to go to sixth form college in Ambridge. And can he do that? Like, and what is sixth form college and why do you have to go to it? Please discuss. Finally, I think it was Goddess Diva who called in and said she loved Lillian and wanted to hang out with her and drink gin and tonics and smoke a lot in the pub. And I'm totally there. I love Lillian too. I think she's awesome. And I love when she said that being a grandmother was like being a flight attendant. Keep up the podcast because they make my week. They make my week. And I love the fact when I go, oh, it's Tuesday. I have to download the podcast. So keep it up. And thanks to Derek for the back bedroom. What is the back bedroom? Like, what is it really? That's all I have to say. Missed you guys. Like to hear you more often than every week. Like to hear the commentary every day, but maybe that's just being too pushy. Talk to you soon. Bye.
A Victoria Littler appears to be clipping her toenails as she's recording her message to us, but we do not care, Victoria. Thank you for your lovely comments. Yeah, haven't had anything.
First time caller.
Yes, cheers. No. You're right, we haven't had anything from Alistair and Shula. And again, I don't care either because I detest both of them. But it would be quite nice to watch their relationship collapse because I don't like either of them, whereas I do like Hayley.
I like Hayley
a lot more than that.
What is there not really to like about Alistair?
Well, exactly. What is there to like? There's just nothing. You know, he's the only man who manages to make a severe addiction problem boring. I mean, it's just not... the world's least exciting poker player. I don't know. It's just all so cosy and middle class and every year... It's like the good life. You know, every year Shula gives up chocolate for Lent. Will she do it? No. Oh, yes, she has. I don't know. Do you remember that episode of The Young Ones when they're talking about the good life?
No.
Did you not watch that?
Never watched The Young Ones. I watched The Good Life, though. I used to love that.
Well, Vivian in The Young Ones said, the problem with The Good Life is that it's all so nice. He said, even that bit where the pig gives birth, they had an opportunity there to do something good and it was still all nice. And that's Julia Alistair. But it's nice with an undercurrent of casual marital abuse, you know, the kind of unpleasantness that you only get in a long marriage.
I tell you, I'll give Alistair props for the fact that he's been a very good father. you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, this has been, you know, he's been a really good stepdad. He's stepped into the role.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. Yes, I keep forgetting that he's not Daniel's proper dad.
Exactly. Because,
I know.
Yeah, give him.
Yeah, something's going to happen, though, because there was all that stuff about him. He's clearly not that into Shula, is he? He's kind of, it's all gone a bit stale and dull, which means, and Shula's not averse to a bit of, how's your somebody else's father? Yeah. Is she?
But she hasn't put it about since the 1980s, has she?
90s?
Did she?
Only a decade, yeah.
What do you mean only a decade? It's 2 decades ago.
Oh, whatever. You know maths isn't my strong point.
Neither is the Archer's history, by the sounds of things.
Hi, Dumpty Dum. This is, well, Cheeky Bint, I suppose, as Royfield so charmingly referred to me last week, but better known to most people as Alison Fahey. I'm actually ringing in today with a bit of a serious point. I just wanted to say how impressed I was with Friday's episode, and in particular with Hayley's dignity and self-assuredness in the scenes in which she confronted Elizabeth and Roy. It must have been incredibly tempting to want to write those scenes with Hayley shouting and screaming. And let's be honest, who of us wouldn't have wanted to have responded to that situation in that way? But Hayley, who's pretty high in my estimation at the moment, rose even higher. She showed herself to be more than equal to Elizabeth and Roy, and certainly no second best. In fact, when that line came out, my heart almost broke for her, and I just really wanted to give her a big hug. I'm not sure how that storyline's going to progress. I'm not sure how I want it to progress. Never one to want to see marriages fall apart. I would be totally behind Hayley, though, if she felt that that was the way she wanted to go. But let's hope that they can find another way through. And but at the same time, to allow Hayley to maintain that sort of strength of character that they've given her. I'm really looking forward to seeing how that happens and to see her grow in the future. Anyway, serious bit over. I shall go back to following the Twitter feed and to following Facebook and making my cheeky little comments as and when I can. Anyway, thanks for the podcast. Catch you later. Bye.
Alison the Cheeky Bint is impressed with Hayley's dignity and self-assurance. Yes.
Yes.
And, yeah, but I do, you know, she's never been a screamer and a shouter, though, has she? She has always been... What? In certain circumstances. I don't know about the rude circumstances. But yeah, she's handled it beautifully. She's handled it in the way we would all like to imagine we would do so. And few of us do, I think.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's Sarah Brown here. Yes, Sarah Brown here. I can impersonate myself. That's quite funny, isn't it? I have really concentrated on catching up this week, and boy, I did love it. I think there are 2-3 things that I just want to quickly say. I, first of all, love John coming back, because do you know who he's like? He's like Dickon in The Secret Garden, all that kind of animal taming genius stuff and that soft, wonderful accent. You know, it's a bit richer and riper than what you've usually got on that kind of fake Ambridge, whatever they do. He's fab, and I think that's going to be really interesting. I think he's going to be running away from home, and he's going to be living in barns, and it's going to be terrific. No, he'd be great. And he'd be great hooked up with Linda, because she's always good with a runaway. More of Linda later. I've had to write notes this week. I love the story with Hayley and Roy. I think she's been an absolute genius. Brilliant, brave, go for it, kid. I don't know what the hell's going to happen there, but you might want to have a word with Lucas about what Phoebe will decide in all of this and whether she'll decide to take a different side altogether. But yeah, go for it, Hayley. Ooh, I still can't quite get Roy as a kind of sex god somehow. My lovely husband, my beautiful world. Still, must be something to fight over. They're not short of blokes in Ambridge, surely. I mean, you know, there are some prettier people out there. Anyway, the other thing was that I think the thing for Linda Snell and for that wonderful actor who plays her, she's got a really tough job on at the moment, because at the one end she's got the sort of the serious stuff about whether the road is going to be built through the whole of our kind of, you know, fantasy world and rip us all to shreds, which is quite serious stuff, even if it is based on a butterfly, the butterfly that's stamped. And at the other end, she's got this ridiculous Mungo Jerry dog story baby name thing going on, which is really awful. And one can only hope that actually at the naming ceremony with all these bods around, they'll suddenly say, oh, it's not Mungo or Mowgli, but it's Martin or Michael or some other kind of slightly innocuous British middle class sort of name. I was going to say something terribly rude then, but never mind. Anyway, that's me having caught up and having been caught up by the storylines this week. And I'm still sure that Heather is going to end up back in Ambridge. And I'm still sure there's going to be that love triangle, as I predicted, with her and my favourite man in the village, Jim, and the very wonderful Carol Trecoran, who might just reappear at some point. Anyway, long one. Thanks a lot. Toodaloo. Bye.
Dickon from the Secret Garden is Johnny. Yes. When Sarah Brown, who's now doing impressions of herself, which is quite exciting, said about the accents, the thing is in the Archers, you have... If you look at the accents, they're geographically all over the place. Some of them are Devon, some of them are Oxfordshire, some of them are Cotswold, some of them are almost Yorkshire.
Joanna said that her accent is Worcestershire.
Yes.
It's
probably the closest to what it ought to be, bearing in mind where Ambridge is geographically.
Mm.
She says boringly. But in the BBC itself, it's known as, well, it used to be known jokingly as Mummerset, because you know mummers were the medieval actors, and it was kind of became this kind of catch-all yokel accent was just called Mummerset, because it was, if you wanted a country person, you didn't have to specify what bit of the country, you were just country, and that was it. But yeah, I quite like the idea of Johnny living in barns, and yes, he's exactly the type that would get picked up by Linda and looked after.
I did think that it was just all a little bit too neat with Johnny, and
odd, yeah.
Considering how the Roy and Elizabeth Haley triangle was being dealt with, in that you didn't know what was going to happen next. Ditto with Rob and Helen. Okay, we kind of suspected when he disappeared for that night, that maybe he'd been swinging his willy about with his missus. But this just seemed to be standard soap trope.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just so neatly done. He's really good with the cows. Didn't see that coming. He's really good. Oh, only he could shepherd them across the road or whatever.
And now he's going to get a place in college.
Yeah, it's just all a little bit too neat.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit too neat, you know.
Haven't we got too many adolescent boys now? Well, that's not a sentence I say often. But surely,
I was thinking a very similar thing. A very similar thing.
They're all going to be squabbling over Phoebe and everything, aren't they? When they're... You know. Because you have to sort of think about the next generation, who's coming up and where the flirtations are going to be.
It is just Phoebe, isn't it?
Yeah, because we did have Daryl's daughters, but now they've all spontaneously combusted. We don't know what's happened to them.
And then the vicar's daughter is just a little bit too old, isn't she?
Yes.
And then, but no, there is Freddie's little sister.
Yeah, Lizzie. Yeah. So, I think she's going to be Ambridge's first lesbian. Why? I don't know. I just think she is.
Are you hoping that she's going to be?
I'm ambivalent. I don't mind one way. As long as she's happy enough, I don't care. But yeah, that's what I think. I think she might be being lined up for that. But I don't know why I think that.
Me either.
No.
Okay.
Just a thought. Just thought I'd mention it. In 10 years time, when she's marching around fixing tractors, you can say, oh, you were right. Look, you see. Oh, that's a big stereotype, isn't it? Why in the hell would she be fixing tractors, for crying out loud?
Hello, Ben here, Cello Suze's brother-in-law, also known as @BensWinemaking on Twitter. And incidentally, I don't think there's been enough storylines about winemaking on the Archers. I've been listening for nearly 20 years now, and it's appeared twice. Once when Nelson was dead and they found a load of bottles in his house. Sorry if I'm sounding a little bit otherwise engaged, it's because I'm stripping elderberries. The second time was Rhys mentioned it once, I think. I was quite excited, but then no more. Anyway.
Cello Susie's brother-in-law, Ben Hardy. Ben, look, just stop calling yourself Ben, because we all know that you're Cello Susie's brother-in-law and that's how we like to think of you. Was stripping elderberries when he rang us. Now, Ben, potato wine. Potato is a potato and wine is wine. I do not believe in this homemade nonsense. Potato wine is the sort of stuff that you find at the back of the cupboard when you come back from the pub and everyone's in an advanced state of refreshment and the only thing, you've drunk the green stuff that they brought back from Cyprus and that's all that's left.
This is where I feel somewhat slightly askew from the world of people that listen to the Archers, because what the hell is potato wine? I didn't even know this was a thing. What are you talking about?
It's a it's homemade wine. It's basically fermented potatoes.
Why make wine at home when you can nip round to the corner shop or the Tesco's
Metro?
Because
if you live in the country, you have to get in your car, drive 6 miles, find a shop that's still open, and it will probably be a petrol station or a Lidl, in which case you'll end up with wine-flavoured drink. And then, then that's what you end up with. But it's part of that whole foraging thing and living off the land. And also, if you have an allotment or a vegetable garden, you either have nothing of, you know, you grow courgettes and you either end up with one courgette the size of your index finger or 47,000 of the buggers. And you have to think of things to do with them. So people make wine.
Courgette wine? Is that a thing?
It's fermented vegetable. You can make it out of anything. I have had potato wine because my grandma used to make it. It looked beautiful. And I'm just thinking back to how old I was when I drank it. And I'm not really sure I should have been drinking anything like it. But anyway, never mind.
Hello, Lucy. Hello, Royfield. Hello, everybody. It's Maeve here. Just a quick call in just to say how wonderful I thought Friday's episode was. I thought the writing was fantastic. And for anybody who has ever been betrayed or left or suffered sort of the angst of a relationship breakdown, it just hit all the spots. It was wonderful. Writing superb and the acting was fabulous. Laters.
Lovely Maeve. She didn't say she was being driven fecking mad today, which is a bit of a shame. But yes, it was an absolute textbook example of somebody who has been betrayed. Poor Hayley. We can't say anything else, really. Poor Hayley, poor Hayley, poor Hayley. And we've had an email from Magic at Mungo's who said, firstly, can I say how brilliant has Hayley been? Stick it to Roy Love. In fact, take the girls and run to Birmingham. But only after making a holy show of the bastard. He deserves it after having inflicted us with having to listen to him delving into Lizzie's tent flaps with his golem feet. Feet? Ugh. And the whole thing with the necklace. It may only be a piece of festival tat, but A, why would Lizzie of all people want that? And B, buying another woman jewellery is just asking for trouble. He must have been desperate to get caught. Can someone please stage an intervention with Helen? She may be a smug piece of work, but she doesn't deserve Titchy Knob doing this to her. She won't believe Jess, although it's blatantly obvious it's his baby. I would not be at all surprised if Titchy Knob hadn't been sleeping with her until the bitter end.
I don't know. Because, as I said last week, that woman's not right. That woman being Jess. And who's to say she hasn't got herself knocked up by somebody else? I don't know. I think there's much more to run on this storyline. And as I said before with Roy and Elizabeth, I'm in for the ride. Wherever it takes us, I'm quite happy to go. But I just think there's going to be unexpected twists and turns here.
Okay. Yes. I don't like it. I do not like it. It still makes me very uncomfortable, but it's very good. But now we've got this one sorted out.
It's not sorted out at all.
No, I know. I just want some of them to end because I keep getting butterflies about it all.
But even when a storyline's ended, it still has ramifications and repercussions, doesn't it? So they never do.
No.
It's called life.
Ooh. Look at you, philosophical self.
And by the way, I just want Maeve just to know that you'll always be first in the queue. one of my girls, because she did put a little message on Twitter, because we're all getting, some of us have got all hot underneath the collar about Mid Miss City.
And then Hang on, what do you mean? The queue? The queue only exists in your head.
No, you
said... What, people are queuing?
Listen, you said that you really, like, had a thing for Mid Miss City to you, and oh God, this could get a little bit kind of, you know... uncomfortable, because you and I and Greavesy 17 said, oh God, oh, we think we're in love. And then Maeve got all upset, saying, oh, my affections have been diverted elsewhere. But no, 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 Maeve, you are number one in the queue.
That doesn't exist.
That doesn't exist there. Mm. But it's lovely to hear her again.
Yes.
So that was the calls, and I suppose it's the time where people have their moment to tweet shine. It's Lucy's hashtag Archer's Tweets of the Week.
So going back to the bloody road, Samarid says, give it up, Snell. The Pangalactic Superhighway's coming and you can't do a thing about it. Mudskip Stoat 23.
Who?
Said, Justin. It's called. When Roy went off to the loo in the middle of the interview with Hayley, he said, "I really hope he goes for a wee and finds Lizzie's head sitting on the cistern." Claire Maxwell said, "New grandson Johnny, just a bit too kez for me."
Yes.
Yes. Mm. Absolutely. Mm. Now, how's the beat? Have we got Derek WD40 in the beat?
Do you think he was there in monochrome with doing a V sign?
Who?
Johnny. It's the book, the cover of.
Oh, yeah. You imagine him kind of a bit too. They're at it again, though. Ooh, you filled out. Have you been using weight? I have to stop ogling young boys. It's weird. God. We need Derek to give the old bleep machine a bit of a squirt with the WD-40. as we've had a very entertaining Twitter exchange.
Okay.
But we're gonna have to beep out most of it. Okay. But it did make me laugh. Is Emily Thomas, who just erupted with fury when Roy was explaining himself to Hayley, and she said, "Get ready with the beep. You bloody didn't hate it. You were begging Elizabeth to be together, you slimebag dickweed weasel f***er, Roy." She then went on. Someone else said, "Can we call him Weasel f***er permanently? As that can that be his name?" And she said, "Only if his full name is Mr. Weasel f***er of Weasel f***er Cottage, Ambridge." So, I don't think we will be using that as his name permanently, but... yes, I did enjoy the exchange. But the best one, tweet of the week. Do you tootle then? We've got a drum roll as well then. It was Dawn Oliver who had Roy saying, this is just so male, it made me laugh. "I want things back to normal. I've had a bit of strange and it didn't work, so now shut up about it." And that's it. And now you need to do your bit. And then we need to go.
All right, so that's it, folks. Dumpty Dum is over for another week. Remember to go to our site, dumptydum.com, to get involved. We can click on shop. That is S-H-O-P shop, or negozi if you're Italian. Dubai, I don't know any other words for shop in any other languages. Ye olde shop. In Old English, I think it was called, to buy t-shirts, aprons, mugs, and things that come resplendent with the word dum-ti-dum, because it helps give us a little bit of spare change in our pocket so we can pay for hosting and things like that. So please do it, but also you'll look great. You'll look fantastic.
We'll love you too.
Yes. Yes. And remember, when you purchase something from the shop, take a pic of yourself and then tweet it to us. And we'll favourite it, and then you'll become like a star on Twitterverse. Right, so reviews, news and reviews. We've had some, and they've been great. And will people stop saying that I'm begging for reviews? This is the currency of podcasting. You get it for free, but it costs you a review. I'm not begging, that's the way it works. So, we're going to thank...
Inner Reality.
Red Bell.
Carl Walters.
And John R. for reviewing us on iTunes so we can get more listeners for our future Sony Award-winning podcast that, with your help in petitioning the BBC, will be on Radio 4 Extra before you can say, Lord Reith! You can follow us on Facebook, where we now have 228 likes, which is just a dribble more than last week. Type in dum-ti-dum to find us, where you can join Paul Charles Wilkins, who was very concerned about my deli belly last week that prevented the show from going out on time. He said, I knew there was going to be consequences with that bloody chicken. Now, he, like many others, drew parallels between my tummy and it being icky and the overcooked bird that was central to the Jess and Helen scene the Friday before last. Remember, folks, you can send us a voice message via the site to get onto the show, because without you, it's just Lucy, basically. You know, and
nobody wants that. Nobody wants that.
And then me just giggling. So get on to our website, send us a voicemail message, or you can call us on 0203 031 3105 from a normal regular phone if you can't navigate the website. Also, you can ping us a text message, like email thing, via the site if you would like to do that. Or you can find us on the Twitters at dumptydum, or you can tweet me at Royfield, spelled R-O-I-F-I-E-L-D,
or me at Lucy B. Freeman.
So please keep those reviews coming, because you want to be top of the podcast charts on iTunes before Heather goes into a home for the toothlessly bewildered.
Bye.
Goodbye, fans of the Archers and Borsetshire and Felpersham and things to do with the BBC and Radio 4 and the Omnibus.
Have you had too much fizzy pop, Royfield?
Not enough. I want some more. All right. See you
in an hour.
Yeah, bye.
Bye.
Fallon, bring another bottle. Another one for me. And another one for Alice. Where's Pacey Burns? It's about time I had a little fun with a man with a nice bottom. Yeah, Roy's got a horrible bottom. It's all flat and pale. Yeah, I am too good for him. Too good. Come on, everybody. Up on the table.
Hello, Ben's winemaking here again. I've just realised that, in fact, there's been loads of stuff about winemaking with Nigel and Elizabeth and Lowell Oxley, but actually that doesn't count because that's made from grapes. I'm talking blackberries, I'm talking potatoes, I'm talking gooseberries, and I'm talking elderberries. That's the proper winemaking that there's not been enough of in Ambridge.